Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. There's a different vibe this year in Sacramento as thousands of public school students and their teachers head back to class. Today, Sacramento City Unified, the school board will vote to ratify an agreement reached between the district and the teachers union, an agreement that appears that both parties are satisfied with. And there's also been progress on the renaming of several campuses within Sac City Unified with historically racist school names. But as we near the end of the first full week of class, a good amount of work still remains. Sac City Unified is still searching for a new superintendent among a list of priorities that spans diversity, equity, inclusion, enableness, closing achievement gaps, and community involvement. Joining us now is Cap Radio's Sacramento education reporter, Srishti Prabha. Srishti is also an education reporter for the Sacramento Observer. Good morning, Srishti.
Good morning, Vicky.
So you and I have both covered the battle between the district and the Sacramento City Teachers Association over contract negotiations over past years. Today is significant, but before we get into those details, you know, let's start with the new school year. Is the school year feeling different than years past?
Definitely. There is less tension between the school board and the staff members, the union members. School board members have conveyed that they're committed to building trust with communities and their schools. I spoke to trustees Jasjeet Singh and Lavinia Phillips, and they aspire to break these silos that the local school board has traditionally inhabited. And both have also worked with the teachers union to formalize the Community Schools Agreement, which is a grant that facilitates participation between schools, the students, parents, and their neighboring communities.
When it comes to contract negotiations, historically, I mean, they're far from fun. They haven't been pretty. They've been contentious at times. So what's happening today and why is it significant?
You're totally right. This is one of the first times in recent history that the district and the union have a joint press release. And this signifies that they're working in tandem. This was confirmed by Nikki Malevsky, president of the Sacramento City Teachers Association.
It has been very disheartening under past leadership, and it certainly gives us a hope with the change in how the new leadership has approached working with their partners, just coming out of this and having a joint statement together about it. Makes a difference, and we hope that that sets a tone for the future.
What did the district get in terms of the negotiations and what was agreed upon?
I asked both parties about compromises that were made, but it seemed both were quite content with the agreement reached. So they didn't really go into the specifics. But I think the significant point to this is that a lot of the money is actually being pulled from the surplus budget of last year. So no extra dollars are required. That money already exists. And the hope is that the new compensation will attract talent to the district to address the teacher shortage, which has been plaguing, you know, all the districts and all the counties in California.
Yeah. So when it comes to the contract for teachers, what's in it for them?
Right. Let's get into it. So the parties have agreed to a 10% increase in salaries retroactively. So it applies to the 2022-23 school year. But then that salary is still ongoing for their future employment. So that salary remains for the next year as well. An additional 6% increase is given to educators who provide critical services. So those can be special ed teachers, audiologists, school nurses, social workers, school psychologists, people whose need is very high, but we're not finding enough of them. And another thing that happened was that the daily maximum substitute rates were changed from roughly $250 a day to $355 a day, which is significant because a lot of substitute teachers would choose to take jobs in Elk Grove and Natomas because the pay was higher. And lastly, 3 days of professional development days were added to the work calendar for the 2023-24 school year and to the 2024-25 school year.
Srishti, all this comes as Superintendent Jorge Aguilar, he stepped down earlier this summer. Who led these negotiations for the district? And what is the sense of how former Superintendent Aguilar's departure may have impacted the talks?
Right. So I asked Nikki Malevsky about this, who is the president of the Sacramento City Teachers Association. And she was explaining that under past leadership, outside consultants were brought in to bargain with the teachers. and the teachers union, which obstructed direct communication with the district staff. But under interim superintendent Lisa Allen, the district's chief business officer and chief academic officer, among others, were actually at the bargaining table.
So that's a big difference.
Big difference.
You know, also, I mean, this is going to, what's happening tonight at the school board is significant, but the district and the teachers, they still have work to do. This isn't it. What is the plan for a longer term contract? Because they want to have something in place by November 15th, right? I mean, that's just around the corner.
Correct. So the school board will vote to ratify the agreement reached by the district and union today. And again, I always talk about school boards. School boards are important because they really are leading these contract negotiations and what is possible. So Trustee Singh, who I spoke with, who is actually committed to working with the union, has said that these discussions are far from over. They will address the 2023-24 and 2024-25 salaries, potential reductions in class size, and internal job transfers by November 15th. So hopefully that will be ratified by that point.
And what is also ongoing is they're searching for a new superintendent. Before we get into how this search is going, remind us about Jorge Aguilar's tenure with Sac City Unified and also who's running the district now.
Yes, very good question. So Jorge Aguilar stepped down in June after 6 years. His tenure was full of strife, culminating to a 12-day strike by teachers and employees last year. And as you heard from Nikki Malevsky, there was a lot of tension and not a commitment to working together. With the interim superintendent, who is Lisa Allen, they've made more strides. So she was the deputy superintendent before and has been in the district as an educator and administrator for 28 years. Both staff and board members are happy with her in this position. Here are two rave reviews, first from Nikki Malevsky, and then the second from school board trustee Jasjeet Singh.
Just in the few months since the leadership change to a long-term educator like Lisa Allen has made a big change in how the district has approached working with us.
As a deputy superintendent, she was already the one who interacted most deeply with staff on a day-to-day basis. So I do know that there's a lot of excitement both from community members, from staff, and so many other folks about having her in this position.
When it comes to the search for who will be the new superintendent of Sac City Unified, is there a short list of candidates? How's it going so far?
So there isn't. And it's a good question because there is actually a process with how candidates are chosen. So the district school board, again, the district school board is important, is leading the hiring process, which involves choosing a recruitment firm, creating a job posting, and evaluating applicants. Jasjeet Singh said that their proposed timeline will take close to a year with the hope that the new superintendent will be in place for the 2024-25 school year without much disruption to the students. Lavinia Phillips, who serves as the vice president of the school board, said she is eager to shift the culture of the district with the new superintendent.
In this next coming school year, priority, second obviously to improving student outcomes, is hiring a new superintendent. We have the opportunity to select a person who will not only honor our community, but also work to activate their values and their visions and what they want in a district that's teaching their children.
Yeah, Trustee Jasjeet Singh confirmed that the school board is committed to seeking input from the community and will host discussions this month with parents and neighbors on required job qualifications for the next superintendent prior to releasing a job posting. That said, nothing has been like fully done yet, so I'm not sure when that will happen.
Which means more for you to follow.
Exactly.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. If you're just joining us, we're talking with CAP Radio Sacramento education reporter Srishti Prabha about the changes at Sac City Unified School District this year. So among the changes, many students and teachers within the district, they're returning to some campuses that have new names. Three schools have new names, and they are Miwok Middle School, which is the new name for Sutter Middle School, Suyu Elementary, which is the new name for Peter Burnett, and Umoja International Academy, which is the new name for Kit Carson. So give us a brief backstory, the history of why these name changes are taking place and why ultimately the district voted to have these new names.
Right. I would suggest going to my story to get the real background for each one. But there is all three were involved with the killing and enslavement of Native American and or African American people. So it was important that these names were changed. Each name given to the new schools has a meaning. Suyu is the Miwok name for hawk. And at the name change celebration, which happened last week, Jesus Tarango, the chairman of Wilton Rancheria and part of the Miwok Nisenan tribe, addresses the significance of letting go of these previously racist names.
When you rename schools, we're not erasing history. We're trying to tell the true history. And that man that was here before doesn't have a very good history. And so again, we love the idea of allowing the first inhabitants of this land to be able to come in and give a name or to maybe present some names that might be respectful.
After he spoke, Jesus and Miwok and Nisenan elders and youth performed multiple dances to honor this name change, which was just amazing to see. Here's some sound from that.
Thank you for sharing that, Shrishti. Yeah, mm-hmm. I wish I could be there, but it was nice to hear, you know, the wonderful sounds and the ceremonies that took place in light of these new changes. You know, the changing of the school names, it's part of a bigger initiative and focus of Sac City Unified when it comes to DEIA, diversity, equity, inclusion, and ableness. They have a DEIA monitor, Mark Harris. Harris, he's been on Inside a few times. We've chatted with him, but explain what his role is and how his role came about, because it came about in recent years.
Right. It's a very good question because his role is so unique. Mark Harris joined the district in 2021 following race-related graffiti incidents on school grounds. Now he's involved in any district issue that might involve diversity, equity, inclusion, and ableness, usually the forgotten part, ableness. So that's a real big initiative that he's taken on this year because in May of this year, Sacramento City Unified reached a settlement with the Black Parole School Board, which you guys covered, over special ed practices for students, specifically for Black students with disabilities. So Lisa Allen wrote to me, said that the Sac City Unified will be holding community meetings with the Black Parole School Board to see how they can inform the public on what this agreement means for their students. And DEI Monitor Harris' primary concerns involves hearing anecdotal evidence and then eventually proposing policies. He has also pushed for a policy to disallow the N-word from staff and administration in the district, and this is something very pivotal for him.
I'm working with a group of leaders in the district on the first phase of the eradication of the use of the N-word in the district. I've been working on that one all summer. And what Interim Superintendent Allen wanted to do as a first step was to do an intra-district look among district leaders, then to go to the public and say, this is what the district believes should be the appropriate outcomes. What say you? I think that's a good approach.
Shrishti, I think some people might be surprised that, you know, that word is not already eradicated within the school district.
That's a good question. I think there are people with different beliefs. I think when you think about Black culture, it's very much prevalent. And so disallowing it can actually negatively impact Black students themselves. That said, I'm not really sure how this policy is going to pan out. So we'll have to, again, keep track of what's going on.
Finally, Shrishti, I mean, how is the district addressing closing some of the achievement gap challenges that they faced in recent years?
Right. So Sacramento City Unified actually released recent assessment results with me, which indicate that the achievement gap has widened between students. Achievement gap is a term we usually use for whether or not students are meeting grade level and that gap between students of color and white students predominantly. In some cases, the gap has remained unchanged, but in general, students of color are not meeting the standards at the same rate as their white counterparts. And the district continues to propose their multi-tiered system of approach, which is an individualized assessment of a student's needs to address the issue. However, this approach has not yielded improvement in test scores over the past 2 years. So I'm curious to see how it's going to change it in this next year. Well, again, another thing I can keep track of.
Yeah, and we have to remember that during this time, there was also the pandemic and remote learning, and that also took a toll on a lot of students as well as teachers and staff. Thank you so much, Shristi. You ran through a lot this morning.
Thanks for having me, Vicky. I'm glad I was able to.
Shristi Prabha is CAP Radio Sacramento Education Reporter in partnership with the Sacramento Observer. Up next, we're going to head to the Sierra Nevada foothills, learn how a handful of counties, they're working together to make it easier to build ADUs, accessory dwelling units, and how they believe this partnership will empower locals to add units for their own community. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicky Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. In California, finding a home, whether owning or renting, is hard to come by and touches every single corner of the state. The challenges, however, can look different from urban to rural communities. Four counties in the Sierra Nevada foothills are pulling their resources together to increase housing stock. Motherlode ADU is a new partnership between Amador, Calaveras, Mariposa, and Nevada counties, and the goal is to make it easier for residents to add accessory dwelling units to their properties, essentially empowering locals to create housing for locals. Ben Goger is a housing and community development specialist for Mariposa County, and he joins us with more on this new approach to curb the housing crisis. Welcome, Ben. Good morning.
Good morning, Vicky. Thanks for having me.
So we have had our fair share of conversations about housing and affordability on this show. People may be surprised to learn there's a housing crisis in Mariposa County, a population of roughly 17,000 people in Central California. Can you give us a front row seat to the challenges you're working to overcome?
Absolutely. And I should say the housing crisis is not only in Mariposa County, but all throughout the western slope of the Sierra Nevada foothills. In that area, we see an aging housing stock. We see lots of dilapidation. We see people reluctant to engage in new construction, and then catastrophic housing loss due to wildfires.
Hmm. I covered the Detweiler fire in 2017, I believe, and then that is obviously not the only wildfire that impacted Mariposa County. Can you give us an idea of the properties that have been lost in really a relatively short amount of time?
Sure, yeah. Well, in the Detweiler fire, we lost a little over 100 homes, and then we also, during the Oak Fire this last year, lost 127 homes. So we've seen about 200 houses just lost from catastrophic wildfire, and it's really hard for people to recover from those type of total losses.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about wildfires. You also touched upon properties that are in need of repair, you know, dilapidated properties and homes. You know, when it comes to the Sierra Nevada foothills and permanent residents, I mean, do you also have an issue of people buying second homes and vacation properties and that creating a housing challenge for people that live there full time?
Sure, absolutely. That's always a hot topic conversation in the foothills as people move up there or acquire second homes, particularly next to destination locations like Yosemite or Truckee. It's a popular place to live and relatively inexpensive compared to the rest of the state.
So given that you're a housing and community development specialist, what has your role been through these challenges? What do you do?
I really try my best to end up increasing our housing stock for our population at all economic levels, trying to provide stability for our communities. And there's nothing more stable than having a safe, sound home to come home to.
Yeah. And you are face to face with residents in your county who maybe want to build housing or are interested flirting with the idea, but they run up against challenges. What are some of the biggest challenges that they run up against and they come to you with?
I would say one of the biggest challenges is probably topography and then affordability, the cost of construction. And then maybe not knowing where to start. How do you get into building a new home for yourself or a second home on your property?
I think about, you know, industries like in construction where they're you're used to working with local government agencies and you kind of know how to, you know, you understand the language and know how to walk through permitting. That could be very hard for an individual who wants to do it for the first time. How do you work to collaborate between, you know, local governments like yourself and your position and helping people not get intimidated or demoralized with the process of potentially wanting to build housing in ADU?
Well, thanks for asking that. That's a big goal of ours, actually, through the Motherlode ADU project, is to be approachable as government officials. And we put together the guidebook really to try to be as friendly as we can, meet people on their own, on where they're at. And it's we're really, when we're talking about housing crisis in California, we need to be engaged in a solution-based conversation with our community members. In order to do that, we really need to be speaking the same language. So making that government speak accessible to everybody helps us both work together.
And you talked about the challenges specifically to the western slope of the Sierra Nevada. That's your county. And you also are working with Amador, Calaveras, and Nevada counties. When did you all start talking with each other and start working together? When did this begin?
This ended up happening right in the middle of the pandemic as we were looking for solutions for housing, and we were getting on Zoom calls and talking back and forth and a lot talking with the state. We have to say we really appreciate the support from the Housing and Community Development Department at the state for supporting us in some of these conversations and convening regions that have similar problems and similar issues so that we can work together for collaborative goals.
To get a picture of just how vast of an area we're talking about, driving from Nevada City to the town of Mariposa can take over 3 hours, more than 200 miles. You know, instead of going at it alone as just a single local government, what is the advantage of working together?
Oh, it's always great to work together with people, right? You get that synergy. We can share, you know, we can share our resources with each other. We can share our financial resources with each other. That's important sometimes to be able to put together a stack of finances to do a project. And so that collaboration has been wonderful. And there's a lot of shared values and obviously shared topography. So a lot of this stuff is applicable across the region. And then everybody's a little bit different as well. And we can get into little details county by county. But it's just great to have a group to work with and think a little bit bigger than our own jurisdiction.
Yeah, I mean, thinking about the similarities that you laid out earlier on, you know, you can be, like, for example, Mariposa is a gateway community to Yosemite. You also have, you know, in Nevada County that obviously touches upon like Lake Tahoe and Truckee. But what are some of those differences that you guys can possibly help each other with?
Yeah, I would say some of the differences are just some of the counties are a little bit bigger than others, have more jurisdictions, maybe have a little bit more developed community development programs than others. Everybody's a little different place. So being able to leverage off of somebody's work is really helpful. Nevada County has been wonderful to work with. They're a little bit bigger county, a little bit more populated than some of the southern Motherlode counties. And so it's great to tie into some of those resources up there.
So the focus is accessory dwelling units. Why ADUs?
Well, ADUs are just a wonderful addition to kind of the housing toolkit in California. And particularly in these rural areas, there's a lot of extra space up there in the foothills. And adding an additional house on the property is an inherently affordable development typology. It's the one we really want to encourage folks to take advantage of. And as the state continues to make it more permissible to construct an ADU, we want to connect people in the foothills with this opportunity.
You mentioned that you do have some assistance from the state, and the partnership between the four counties is called Motherlode ADU. Your website just launched last week to help residents and walk them through this process or just get more information. You know, what does this say that the state is stepping in to help fund a partnership like this? And what does this funding actually accomplish? How does it benefit your four counties?
Yeah. So we appreciate the state's funding. It's funded through a regional early action planning grant. So the state has made some very strategic investments through the years to promote housing, I would say, fairly well across the whole state. And so putting this effort into this region is much needed, and it's been a good boost for us. And it augments other complementary programs that the counties are working on, like master plan sets of ADUs that people can get at the planning counter, or different potential incentives for building ADUs as well. So it's nice to have that influx and support from the state.
Is the funding ongoing? Or how long does it last? So how do you keep the program going?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. So, the program is, you know, mostly a book, and it's a guidebook, a comprehensive guidebook that's available at all jurisdictions, and the website that's ongoing. And so that was the big lift, to be able to put together all that comprehensive materials. And once that's online, it's not as much of a financial burden to keep it going.
You're listening to Insight here on CAF Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're learning about a new partnership between Mariposa, Calaveras, Amador, and Nevada counties to increase housing. It is called Motherlode ADU, and the goal is to help locals build accessory dwelling units on their property. I'm joined by Ben Goger, who is the Housing and Community Development Specialist for Mariposa County. So I just said that the website went live last week. Give us a tour. You know, what does it look like?
Sounds great. Yeah. So motherlodeadu.org is really a comprehensive website that walks people through the accessory dwelling unit construction and development project. And it's really kind of walks you through step by step the different steps you have to take, and five main steps, essentially, from a project development all the way to moving into your home. Each one of those steps is really accompanied by a suite of tools that we ended up developing specifically for the region and specifically for each county. For example, in project development, as people are starting to get acquainted with building an ADU, we want to inspire them to think about what they can have on their property. So we have a suite of floor plans available. We have spotlight videos where people can see other community members who have built an ADU in their town and get a little bit more comfortable with the process. Can I build tools, budgeting tools? So budgeting and finance is a huge part of this, you know, to get people comfortable. So we have a return on investment calculator that's accompanied with that, as well as quite a few budget worksheets.
Yeah, the one that, I mean, it's very user-friendly, you know, especially if you're just kind of, you know, flirting with the idea and just trying to figure out if it's even realistic financially or even logistically to do it. You know, you also have a cost estimator, because that can be, obviously, is like a big piece of deciding whether to move forward, and it's by county, correct?
Yes, absolutely. All of these are well thought out per each county's construction cost and tax rates and things like that.
Hmm. When it comes to evolving rules and regulations, it's always changing in California. How do you help walk people through, you know, all of these changes to make sure that they're on the same page? And also, there's cost saving programs being offered as well that can kind of slip by some people.
Yes, absolutely. And that's a real goal of this project, was to align the current rules. Right now, there's been a lot of ADU legislation that's been coming out of the state since 2018. So being able to catch all that stuff up in one document for the rural counties is really important for staff and individuals alike to kind of know what's available for them. And then ongoing, as more legislation rolls out, that's easy for us to kind of update through our development standards through this format.
The main goal is obviously to increase housing, and this is through ADUs and empowering, you know, homeowners to take this on. But just looking at the website, it doesn't look like a typical government website. So there's a change in culture, a change in language, and how local governments build a relationship with residents, empower them, especially for something that can feel like you're in the dark and can feel intimidating. What conversations took place to take a different approach?
We have a lot of conversations through the years when we hear back from people who come to our development services counters, and they're a little bit lost a lot of times. Staff is busy. There's a lot of things that basically make it hard for people wanting to really engage. So we wanted to have this colorful, I wish we could show it, but we're on the radio, but this very colorful, user-friendly format that brings people in and allows them to be able to connect in a very user-friendly level. And that's something that we're really happy to do. And we'd like to do more in a lot of our government jurisdictions. And just try to connect with people where they're at.
It's only been a few days, maybe a week, since this website and guidebook or workbook went live. What has the response been so far?
Oh, it's been great. Yeah, people have been loving it so far. They can get on there on the website and just look around and get so much information that they would have to sluice out of either code or out of talking to development services staff. Now it's right there at their fingertips. So that's been very positively received. We had a launch event at the Mariposa County Fair this last weekend, and a lot of people are excited to see these opportunities. And we're going to keep launching it out at Nevada County tomorrow as well.
Yeah, tell us about that event. And it's Nevada County Collaboration Day, and it's on September 8th, and it's all day. What can people expect, you know, when if they choose to go make the trip?
Yeah, well, I hope some people do. I hope they come up to Nevada County. It's going to be basically all afternoon from 2 to 6 tomorrow at the Rood Center in Nevada City. That's 950 Maidu Way. And it's going to be a lot of different activities for people to engage in. The Motherlode group will be there. I'll be there tomorrow. But also Nevada County has plan sets that they're going to be rolling out. And then there'll be some food trucks. There'll be some fun times. So come up and connect with us. And if you've thought about wanting to build an ADU or wanting to build in general, this is a good opportunity to come and talk to county staff at a more informal setting where you can kind of bop some ideas around.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, we're talking specifically about really just kind of like a tool in the overall toolbox. I mean, not everyone can build an ADU, but what do you hope this achieves maybe like 5 years from now when you take a look at your county and you take a look at the housing stock and hopefully the improvement of housing availability for people?
Well, I hope it puts many units on the ground. You know, we have this, we really need extra units right now for community housing and workforce housing. So that could be nurses, firefighters, teachers, as well as aging populations or younger people starting out on their own. So really getting those people connected with affordable housing at their price point is critical right now. And that's what I would love to see, is having those community members that are so critical for every community to be healthy, be able to get into an ADU or get into a housing unit comfortably and affordably, and just be able to have a good, stable life.
Ben, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ben Goger is the Housing and Community Development Specialist for Mariposa County, discussing a new partnership between Mariposa, Calaveras, Amador, and Nevada counties to increase housing called a Motherlode ADU, and that helps locals build accessory dwelling units on their properties. Still ahead, we're going to learn about a new dual enrollment program that allows juniors and seniors to get a head start on a college degree, reduce tuition, all before high school graduation. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi, Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Going to high school while earning college credits. A new program in Sacramento allows juniors and seniors to get a head start on a college degree and reduce tuition before high school graduation. The dual enrollment program is at Sacramento Charter High School, and it's called the Panther Pipeline. St. Hope Public Schools, which runs Sac High, says it's only one of two high schools in the city that offers high school students a chance to earn college credits. Laura Davis is the college coordinator at Sac High. We're also joined by student Edie Park, who is part of the Panther Pipeline, and they're joining us with more on how the first year is going. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for making the trip. Okay, Laura, I want to start with you. Let's start off with the big, broad question. Tell us about St. Hope Public Schools.
Of course, yeah. So St. Hope Public Schools is a high-caliber college prep public charter school system in Oak Park. We serve TK through 12th grade students, and for 20 years, we've been successfully closing the opportunity gap. We pride ourselves on providing scholars with the strongest possible foundation for learning and career success. Many of our scholars are the first in their family to go to college, and we feel passionate about exposing them to as many opportunities as possible to spark their interest in pursuing a college degree when they graduate high school. We decided to take our mission and vision and of helping scholars to and through college one step further by piloting this dual enrollment program this year.
Given that you're a college coordinator, you know, why do you love what you do? How did you get into it?
Yeah, so I actually, this is my first year at this school and in this role, but I am a Sac High alumni myself, so I come from a perspective of knowing what the school is and wanting to bring new opportunities. And I think as a college prep school, it's important that we're exposing our kids to college in new ways.
Yeah. You know, given that Sac High is one of only two schools that's offering something like this, what was the inspiration behind this program?
So the inspiration was just to ensure that students are really going off to college with the most experience about college as they can and understanding the true rigor of college coursework, while also providing them the same supports and even more supports than they would receive when they go off to college for the first time.
Yeah. Tell us how the program works, the Panther Pipeline.
Yeah. So it is, we have real college professors coming on campus to teach twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And then on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, they're still in the same classroom, but they have a co-teacher that we've hired to help support the students. And she does check-ins with the students. She's our parent liaison. And so students really understand the true rigor and have the full support that they need.
So that's probably where the name dual enrollment comes from and the meaning behind that.
Yeah. So they actually are getting both high school and college credits for it at the exact same time. And it's free for our scholars. And so that's the most exciting part about it, is that all these students are entering college for the first time with college credits already in their back pocket. They can have priority registration when they go off to school. All the courses are free for them. And so I really think that we're doing a world of wonders for our students with this.
Yeah, because even if it is relatively affordable at a community college level or a public university versus a private university, I mean, all of that can add up. I mean, it's incredible that you can take these college courses and not have to spend anything.
Yeah, and we buy all the books for them. We were actually able to apply for a grant through the California Department of Education last year, and we got the grant. And so over the next 4 years, we have $100,000 to spend towards these students and make sure that they have the textbooks and the tutoring and all the support.
All right, Edie, you're part of like the first cohort of a Panther Pipeline. You're a student at Sac High. What interested you in taking part in it?
Well, like how Ms. Davis said, it provides many advantages for when you're entering into college, and also it builds skills for students that are even still in high school, and so that when we enter into college, we're just that much more prepared.
How has it been going so far? I know it's only been a few weeks, but...
It's been rather, like, it's been smooth. Like, there haven't been any issues so far. Everyone's kind of just getting acclimated back into, like, the school routine and also adjusting to the different classroom structure and the workload and stuff like that.
Laura, do you have an idea of how many students like ED are taking part in this?
Yeah, we have over 50. We're piloting this program with just our juniors and seniors this year. Mm-hmm. Our long-term vision and goal is to be able to provide college opportunities for our freshmen and our sophomores as well. And eventually, students will be able to finish their associate's degree by the time they graduate high school. But that's a lofty goal, many years far from where we are today. But it's really exciting to be the pilot of this program this
year. Yeah, it's a good one to have, though, even if it is a lofty goal. That would be awesome. Are you a junior or a senior?
Yeah, I'm in my junior year.
That is so great. So what classes are you taking?
In general, or
with the dual enrollment program?
With the dual enrollment, the first semester is the fall semester, so I'm taking a human career development class, which will get me 3 credits, and then in the spring semester, I'll be taking an anthropology class, which will also get me 3 units.
What is the big difference so far between the other high school courses that you're taking?
Well, I would say the intensified workload is probably the main, like, standout between the two. It's just a different style of work that you're doing. Like, obviously, we have discussions in a normal day-to-day class, but in these ones, it's a little bit more critical thinking that you're putting into the conversations you're having, and you're also, like, adding on more to your peers, and it's just a lot more thought out.
Yeah, I guess, Laura, what kind of support is given to students? I mean, this is new and, you know, it is a more rigorous workload to help them, like, navigate, feel confident and not get, you know, too overwhelmed with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So everyone on our campus is in support of this program. So we have all of the staff and academic counselors available to them, but we also have all of the Sac City counselors available. And then we have our own co-teacher that does weekly check-ins with the students, mm-hmm. make sure their grades are good. And then also an extra support for our seniors. They're taking a little bit more rigorous class work with their English course. And so they're also enrolled into an English support class to kind of help them with their writing if they need it.
Given that you are a graduate of Sac High, what do you think it would have added to your high school experience if this existed when you were a student?
Yeah, I actually was able to take some dual enrollment classes when I was in high school, but we didn't offer it on our campus during our school day. And that's what kind of sets us apart from a lot of other schools is that we have the professors coming on campus to teach. There's one other high school in the district that does it online. And so I think that if I were to have had the full scope of this program where teachers were coming on campus, it would have been easier for me. I wouldn't have had to worry about transportation. Everything would have come to me and the support would have been there in class.
Yeah. ED is one of 50, you know, that's taking part in this new pipeline. What response have you received from students so far?
So far, so many of them are upset that they didn't apply last year. A lot of them are wondering when they can start college courses. And we've seen just a definite increase in our students' ability to want to take college courses. Mm.
You talked about or touched upon the vision for the dual enrollment program. When it comes to the application process, and, you know, some people are kind of, you know, like, shoot, I wish I did it last year. What is the application process like?
So the great thing about Sac City is there isn't an application through them, but I created an application because I wanted our students to really understand the rigor of the coursework that they were going to be taking in the next year. And there aren't any minimum eligibility requirements, but I did have, like, a preferred GPA that I wanted students to apply with. But that doesn't mean that that was the absolute requirement. If they didn't have that GPA, I would just have them submit an extra essay as part of the application about maybe why they didn't have that GPA and what they could have done differently to increase it. And so there were other essay requirements and then a contract and then also some teacher recommendations, and then the parents had to sign off on everything, just because it's a definite difference in rigor of coursework and just the academic honesty policy. And there's so much more that goes into the college courses than the high school courses. And so we really wanted to make sure that they knew really what they were getting themselves into.
Edie, what conversations are you having with, you know, your fellow Panther Pipeline students that are taking part in these college courses?
Sorry. I would just say that everyone is just trying to adjust to the different coursework. And this is not a normal class that you would take in high school. Human career development is something that it's new. It's new information. We're learning new things. And a lot of the class is learning about resources and like building study habits and things like this. And we don't have that. We don't really like typically have a class specifically on that topic. And so a lot of it is just reflecting what we're learning and like kind of how we can implement it into like our actual like normal high school classes. And yeah.
Given that this is pretty much like new curriculum for a high school student, you know, and you're doing that, you're part of the first group that's embarking upon this. How do you think it's going to benefit you, Edie?
Well, when I go into college, I will have that advantage and like a foot in the door. I'll already have credits, so I'll be well on my way to getting my associate's degree. And again, I will already be accustomed to the structure of these college classes. So while the college environment itself might be foreign, the classwork and the classroom dynamics will not be anything new.
When you're talking to your fellow classmates, you know, juniors and seniors, and the topic of college comes up, you know, how does that topic go? I mean, is it kind of an intimidating one? I mean, either not only through academics, but financially and just trying to figure out how to make it happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. It is definitely an intimidating subject. And this class especially helps us learn about financial aid, how to get it, because a lot of the students don't know like these things. They don't know the resources that they have. And so having these classes, it opens the doors to the possibilities of things that students can utilize and make their college experience better and easier.
Yeah, I mean, that takes me back to high school. My parents didn't go to a university. And so, you know, you're just kind of navigating it in the dark. And I had no idea all the additional resources that could have been available to me as a student when I was applying to college. You know, how are you helping students navigate this? Because this is like adult stuff, and there isn't really financial literacy always baked into, you know, a high school setting. So how do you help them navigate something that is a lot of responsibility?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we on our campus, it is a college prep school, so we have an advisory course once a week, and that kind of helps introduce these ideas. But it's a totally different ball game to have the actual colleges come to our campus and speak to the students and them take actual college courses. And we were really intentional with the courses that we selected to provide for the scholars. The course Edie's talking about as a junior taking human career development is talking about study skills. It's talking about everything, all the resources available to you in the college. And there's actually a counselor that works at the college that's teaching that class. So she's already linking up and networking with the students about what the colleges can provide and accommodate to for them. And so I think that's the biggest thing, is being intentional with this program.
Starting college with college credits already, I mean, one that is just, you know, you got a leg up, but also that is hopefully a reduction in tuition, right?
Oh, yeah. For sure. Especially like Edie will have 6 units under her belt. But last year she took a 3-unit course as well. So she'll have 9. And then next year she's hoping to take another 4 classes. So by that time, she's already done with a semester of work. That puts her ahead in priority registration for classes, which is a huge difficulty with a lot of freshmen going into college, is that they can't get into the classes that they want to get into. And so all of our students are already going to have a leg up with that.
Yeah. Edie, I see you like nodding like very intently. I mean, so like thinking, kind of navigating the financial aid aspect, or just the finances and tuition of college. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a huge benefit for you by having these college credits.
Yeah. And like Ms. Davis said, we don't pay for any of our books that we even need for these courses. So things in community college are obviously quite a bit cheaper, and you don't have to pay tuition at all, pretty much. And so we basically have no fees at all. Like, there's nothing that we are required to pay for. So if we are able to get our associate's degree, for anybody that wants to move on to a four-year university to get their bachelor's degree, they have, like, 2 years of tuition out of the way that they never had to pay.
Yeah. Given that that pressure is alleviated for you, you know, and you're starting to think about college, do you have colleges in mind? Do you have an idea of what you would even want to major in?
Yeah, I would like to stay in California. So I'm hoping to get into either UC Berkeley or UCLA, and hopefully something within the STEM area, specifically technology or like engineering. Mm. Yeah.
Finally, Laura, I mean, this is a great step for just overcoming like really big challenges with wanting to go to college, which is something that, you know, it can be expected of a lot of people. So I would just imagine that, you know, it makes you feel good to be part of it.
It does. It absolutely does. It warms my heart to see that there's more of a buy-in with our scholars with wanting to go to college. And also just you can see that they're just more motivated to get through school. So it definitely makes me happy.
Laura and Edie, thanks. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was a fun conversation.
Yeah.
Laura Davis is the college coordinator at Sac High. Edie Park is a student who is part of the Panther Pipeline. It is a new dual enrollment program at Sacramento Charter High. It allows juniors and seniors a chance to earn college credits in high school. And that is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. If you want to join the conversation, shoot us an email, insight@capradio.org. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. We'll catch you back here on Monday.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.